And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table with the Pop Culture Happy Hour crew. How's everybody doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books and comics for the NPR website.
And Trey Graham, what do you do for NPR?
I'm the movies editor for NPR.org, and, you know, I noodle around the edges.
And Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am an editor at NPR Music, which means that I am about to fly south for South by Southwest.
Are you excited?
I am very excited, though it should be noted as a programming note that we will not be doing this show next week.
That's right.
Spring break!
It's all your fault.
We are going to take a week off. We're going to have a little spring break while Stephen and also our esteemed producer, Mike Katzeff, head down to South by Southwest to listen to bands.
And I head down to Miami to turn this pallor into a slightly different pallor.
A crisp pinkness.
And, and Trey and I are basically just stuck here like a couple of chumps.
You're not going down to Cabo to
do
jello shots at Senor Frog's?
Not right this minute, although that is a good idea. Speaking of good ideas, the first thing we have on our agenda today is a category we're calling On Second Thought, or possibly How Wrong I Was.
That's right.
I liked both titles, so we're just going to have to see which one sticks. We were going to talk about things where perhaps you had an original idea about something the first time you heard it or saw it or experienced it, and then later, perhaps much later, you had an entirely different reaction to it. So let's start over here. Glenn Weldon, why don't you kick it off?
It was a balmy July day in 1999. Mm-hmm. And a young, fresh-faced Glenn headed over to his friend's house because it's like, hey, guys, let's do something. Let's party, as long as we're careful to stipulate that party, in my definition, means sit around, drink beers, and eat fried things. And
is there another definition?
Yeah, I know.
I was going to say.
Yeah. This is why
someone's
you are
holding
my
out
friends
on me. Yeah.
So I go in the door, and I am immediately shushed because my friends are watching their favorite television show, and it's the season finale of their favorite television show, and the VCR is broken, so they have to watch it in real time, so shush, sit down over there. This is a show that they have raved about for several years, and I have raged against for several years, but I've never actually seen it, but I know enough about it to hate it. First of all, it's on the WB. It's a schmoopy show about, are you my girlfriend? I don't know, am I your boyfriend? Blah, 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 schmoop. It's set in high school, which, you know, that's like going back to NAMM. Why the hell would I want to see a show set in high school? And the worst thing is that these are grown-ass men and women. This is a college professor, it's a doctor, it's a writer, and they're sitting around watching this show that is intended for angsty tweens. They tell me to shut up and sit down.
I have a feeling I know where this is.
I sit down.
This is so suspenseful.
The other thing about the show is it has this sort of silly, poorly produced horror element that just looks... another thing that kind of turns me off. Mm-hmm. It's based also on a movie that was okay, but certainly nothing to build a franchise around. I just don't understand why they're so excited about it.
What show will it be?
So I start making fun of it, you know. I go, so whenever they turn into vampires, they get really big foreheads. Mm-hmm. What is this, Dawson's Creek? Is that James Vanderbeek? Because I was making
the forehead jokes.
It wasn't a dated reference then.
No.
I just want to point that out. So we're watching, and, you know, they're shushing me, and I'm trying to figure out who's the Rutger Hauer character, who's the Donald Sutherland character. Mm-hmm. That's obviously Christy Swanson. It turns out to be, of course, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The episode was Graduation Day, Part 2.
Oh, that's such a good episode.
So I'm sitting there watching, and that was a good joke. That landed pretty well. That was pretty well handled. That was a nice character beat. And then finally, it's the mayor's speech, which knocks it out of the park.
We are journey's end. And what is a journey? Is it just distance traveled, time spent? No. It's what happens on the way. It's the things that shape you. At the end of the journey, you're not the same. Today is about change. Graduation doesn't just mean your circumstances change. It means you do. You ascend to a higher level. Nothing will ever be the same.
It has begun. My destiny. It's a little sooner than I expected. I had this whole section on civic pride, but I guess we'll just skip to the big finish.
When the episode ends, I say, we're going to watch everything that you have of this show. Mm-hmm. So we proceed to watch, I think, pretty much half the first season that night. We go until about 3 o'clock in the morning watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I was very wrong about that show.
You sure were. That was actually going to be mine.
Oh, no. How problematic.
Yeah, I saw the original in the theater, thought,
yeah, exactly.
It's all right. You know, 2.5 stars, you know, that kind of thing. I was hearing positive things about it. Mm-hmm. The first one that I saw, I just happened to be flipping channels at random. Mm-hmm. And this was still in the first season, hit the Invisible Girl.
Right.
And it took about 10 minutes for me to be like, and
it's longer than it usually takes.
And to race back and catch up and be the world's biggest Buffy geek until halfway through season 6 when I stopped.
Wait a minute.
I have a side point I have to pause and make here because of my need to be right about things. So, Glenn, are you saying that the fact that you watched an episode of this show in the middle and just kind of grabbed into it in the middle, rather than going all the way back to the beginning and starting there, the fact that you watched a pivotal episode that didn't start from the beginning did not ruin the experience of watching this show for you?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Not
Are
only
you
that.
Are saying that, in fact, sampling it perhaps piqued your interest?
If you recall, this was part two of a two-part
part
finale.
Two of a two-parter.
Right. Somewhere Scott Tobias is shaking his fist at his iPod.
But actually, if you remember that year, it was...
I'm raising the roof right now. I just want y'all to know.
It was delayed. It was pushed until July because of Columbine. Yep. So they kind of pushed all the way back. So that's why...
Oh, so then you have that episode, the one where she can hear thoughts.
Yeah, that was also, I think, not necessarily put on at the same time. But this is why my friends were so rabid about it and reacting very emotionally to this episode that I kind of just thought was really funny and well done. And, of course, that's the episode where a lot of the mythology of the show gets literally blown up and it moves out of the high school. So, yeah, that was it.
Well, the reason why I bring this up, as some of the people sitting around the table know, perhaps all of the people sitting around the table know, my fascination with this partly comes from the fact that earlier this week was embroiled in a discussion, debate, lively conversation.
A lively back and forth.
Back and forth with Scott Tobias and Noel Murray at the AV Club, who apparently have a long-standing battle over whether, if you're going to pick up a show, like, for instance, this started talking about Justified on FX, do you have to go back and start at the beginning, which is Scott's position, or do you not have to do that? Is it okay to start watching if you hear the show is good, and then you can always go back and fill in, which is Noel's position, and also, incidentally, my position. And that is why...
Noel won, Scott zero.
That's a good... Well, more importantly, Linda won. Linda won, Noel a half.
Does it defeat your... Does it at all make your victory the least bit pyrrhic when I say that I did go back to the beginning?
No, the very beginning. That is fundamental to the theory. Fundamental to the theory is you can always go back, and it's not going to ruin watching the old ones that you have this quote-unquote spoiler for what's going to happen later.
Sure.
Right. I think the crux of Linda's argument is that if you discover a show at its maturity and you are charmed by it, then you'll just be hooked, and you're not going to care that you've already seen this episode and that you'll know what it's building toward.
Right, and it's also that you don't benefit people when you discourage them from sampling things on the basis that, well, you can't sample it right now. You have to go back to the beginning and watch 6 seasons before you
can feel like... Yeah, at which point, I have to invest 40 hours.
At which point people just say, well, forget it. I'll just keep watching whatever stupid thing I'm watching now. Whereas if you tell people, hey, try it. If you like it, you can always go back and fill in. And I've done that a million times. And I personally think it works fine. And I'm derailing a little bit. Since it happened to come up and since it gave me an opportunity to push
punk,
something about
to
which...
Scott Tobias.
The punk Scott Tobias, who I'm obviously very fond of, but who I do like to argue with on Twitter a little bit. So that's just all I wanted to say about that. Are you done on Buffy, Glenn?
Done on Buffy.
Trey Graham.
Sorry, what was the question?
What were you horribly, horribly wrong about?
Well, yeah, you people. I mean, I used to enjoy your company, but the incredible chore of gathering in the studio every week to natter about nothing.
No,
and then choosing
fair.
A venue for real happy hour afterwards. It's just poisoned all
Feet
of it.
Bar.
I'm just going through the motions now.
Yeah, geez.
That's right.
No, that's obviously this is a lie. A true thing.
He never liked us.
what is true, and I don't know, this may surprise you, I kind of hated Shakespeare, you know, once upon a time. We read Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar in high school, as I guess you do. It just kind of left me cold and bored. I don't know, although I started seeing and writing about theater kind of early in my career, I was more interested in musicals and contemporary theater, I think, at the beginning. And it wasn't really until 1993 or so that I think I finally got it. It was Richard III, Ian McKellen, with the National Theatre in the production that later got adapted into a movie. And I had seen some fairly serious, fairly heavy theatre around that time, including a small theatre production of Christopher Marlowe's Edward II, and even a production of No Exit. But what really clicked, I think, with this production of Richard III was a combination of my own readiness for it and the absolute command that cast had of language. And, you know, the direction was smart. It was set in this alternative 1930s England where the fascists had gotten the upper hand. And it really showcased how ruthless the play's politics are and what a completely charming villain Richard is and how much scorn you can put into a curse, things like that. I mean, it's just, it was a production that was just firing on all cylinders. And it made the greatness of this stuff utterly transparent to me. It set me completely on fire, and I never saw theater the same way again. A theater of all kinds, not just Shakespeare. I mean, it totally won me over for Shakespeare, but it completely changed the way I thought about theater. If you've ever thought that Shakespeare was boring, find yourself a copy of that Richard III movie and give it another shot. Give the movie a shot. Give Shakespeare another shot. And as far as how wrong I was, I've even seen a couple of interesting Julius Caesars and Romeo and Juliets since then.
Excellent.
There was plenty of poetry on the page, but you should really see these plays performed, and preferably by people who've spent some quality time with them.
You know what's funny about Shakespeare is that when I was in high school, I loved reading Shakespeare, and then I never did again.
Yeah.
So I had the exact opposite experience. Seriously, I was like, wow, this is just such great, you know, vivid, crackling writing. Mm-hmm. And I just tore through it in, you know, English Lit or whatever, and then never again.
Then you discovered television.
Then I got progressively stupider with age until I am the dullard I am today.
Well, Stephen, do you have an entry in the How Wrong I Was?
Well, it's painful because seriously, my example was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And had you started with me instead of Glenn, Glenn would not have been able to say, back in the 1999.
That's exactly what I said, Stephen. Thank you.
A barefoot boy with a cheek of 10.
Cheek of 10. It's not true.
Dude.
I definitely tried in the process of thinking about this to think about reviews I would take back. Mm-hmm. I tried to specifically think, okay, you know, I wrote a review that, oh, please let nobody ever find it.
Right.
One that jumps out in my mind is for The Onion back in, like, 1994. I reviewed Beck's Mellow Gold. It was sort of like, everybody loves this one song, Loser. What about the rest of it? Well, it's terrible.
This guy will go nowhere.
This hack will do nothing and go nowhere. And it's just so smug and snotty. And, of course, I was, like, 22. And I'm still smug and snotty, but I was 22 and smug and snotty, which is
so less. You wear it much better.
So I've learned to hide it under a.
Can you post a link?
No, I sure can't.
Say, I think probably somebody's going to dig it up.
No, yeah, I'm going to say it.
Dearly,
it's probably going to be me.
You know what's incredibly painful is The Onion. Sometime after I left, about 6 years ago, The Onion went back and posted like years and years and years of old reviews that I had painstakingly scrubbed from the site. So anything you read by me before like 1999 was they just put the wrong byline on it. That was Keith Phipps. If you see something with my name on it that's really stupid, it was probably Keith. Okay, other thing. I mean, I've had experiences where I've had an immediately negative response, like I'll put on a record, think this is going to be the stupidest, crappiest thing in the world, and then been immediately set straight. I remember I hated Radiohead's song Creep. The local, like, sort of modern rock station played it like three times an hour, and it was just like, oh, this, you know, sullen, stupid knockoff, blah, blah, blah. And when I got a copy of The Bends in the mail, I thought, oh, you know, it's time to tear this a new one, and which took about 8 minutes before I peeled my jaw off the floor, started it over, and wrote a pants-wetting rave review. But that was a case where I was right. I've had several people suggest that maybe, you know, I should go back and reassess this new season of American Idol now that the judges have gotten their feet wet. Nope. Completely. I did. I went back. I'm almost caught up. Terrible.
So you're just sticking to your guns.
So mostly I'm sticking to my guns, but boy, don't find any back issues of The Onion, like I said before.
Definitely don't Google Stephen Thompson, The Onion, back.
Say that had better not be in their archives.
Very good, very good. I have never hidden the ball about this kind of thing. I've told several of these stories over time. I have repeatedly told the story of being interviewed before I worked at NPR, being interviewed by Netta Ulaby about fall TV one season and really, really not liking Friday Night Lights.
Ripping a strip out of it, as I recall.
Having seen the pilot, really thinking it was boring and really thinking it was just sort of slow and plodding and poorly done. And fortunately, that part didn't make it into the piece. The parts that made it into the piece were the parts where I was against this thing that they did with Jeffrey Tambor and John Lithgow that lasted about 4 episodes.
Well, like Old Cranks. Yeah, it was something like that. I don't remember what it was called.
Fundamentally Old Cranks. But anyway, I recovered from that and later learned to love it. I've also written about a similar experience with The Big Bang Theory, which I watched the pilot of, and it was horrible. And I still sort of believe the pilot is terrible, so I've only partially changed my mind. I've come around on the show, but not the individual pilot. A story that I think I have told less often, I hope. The first time I encountered the girl with the dragon tattoo, it was on an audiobook. And if you try to listen to that as an audiobook, the many similar Swedish names become even more daunting than
they
are.
It's like going to IKEA.
It's very much like shopping for spatulas at IKEA.
And if someone were reading the catalog aloud.
It became even more intimidating and even harder to follow and distinguish, and I just lost all interest. And it was probably a year or two before people had been talking about it so much and how good it was, and I had a Kindle by then, so I could once again get books without buying books.
How dare you, Linda Holmes?
And I really liked it, and I tore through it very quickly. And that was one that I had for a long time thought of every time I encountered it mentioned somewhere. I would think, oh, that's that horrible, boring thing I could not even remotely begin to get into. But it turns out that was not a good one for listening. That's a better one for reading. How wrong I was. Anyway.
We should throw a quick shout out to our pal Andy Selsberg.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A devoted listener to the podcast who suggested the idea.
And who is also the writer of a book I love very much.
What's the book?
The book's called Dear Old Love.
Dear Old Love.
He has a website where people submit a little note to an ex.
Speaking of how wrong I was.
Speaking of how wrong. It's kind of perfect. Yeah. Perhaps this is how I thought of it. It's wonderful. Wonderful. And the one I always remember is somebody who left a comment that said, my love for you is like a mummy. Something like immortal with the brains sucked out or something like that.
I believe it's like painstakingly preserved with the brains sucked out.
Anyway, then he collected a bunch of these into a book, and it is both enormously funny and super, super moving. When I read it, I cried, but I also just giggled and giggled and giggled. It is a wonderful, wonderful little tiny book, Dear Old Love, highly recommended, and Andy gave us this.
And stuff. Linda does not know Andy. Linda is not merely log rolling for a pal.
That's correct. I did not find out until after I had loved this book that he was a pal of Stevens.
He worked for The Onion back when I was savaging Beck records.
So perfect. And it gives me an opportunity to throw in a plug for Dear Old Love.
Absolutely.
Definitely recommend. And you should feel free, of course, as always, to tell us in the comments either on the blog at Monkey C or on our Facebook page, which again you can find by searching on Facebook for Pop Culture Happy Hour. You should feel free to show up and tell us what you have been terribly wrong about. Don't be shy. And we will be happy to share in your remorse. The next thing we were going to talk about today, as we mentioned, we are going to be off next week, away from all of you. And
off is sort of a,
well,
in the case of Mike and me, who will be working like 110-hour weeks.
Well, we'll be off of this. The show will be off.
No, I'll be off.
I'll be off too, and I think the rest of us will probably just get together and have drinks, and then you will, you know, be in Austin for Southwest. Because where would you get drinks?
Yeah. I was just gonna say I will not have access to drinks at all. Yeah.
At any rate, we will miss all of you out there, and we hope that you will remember us when we return. But until then, we thought we would suggest something that you can do with the time that you would have spent listening to the podcast next week. Something in the spirit of what we love and what we like to do that you can do instead of listening to us. Now, not all these things are going to be suitable for the way that some of you listen to the podcast, such as running, doing the dishes. Yep. Mm-hmm. I want to just briefly mention my favorite kind of note that people leave on the Facebook page is when they specifically describe how they listen to the show.
Yes.
That is my personal favorite kind of note. So I just want to give a shout out to everybody who does that. Please keep doing
that. It makes us feel like we're staring through your windows.
It really does, which is kind of the long-term plan for the show. So don't tell anyone. Yeah.
Wait, Linda Holmes, what are we calling this segment?
We're calling this segment Filling the Hole in Your Heart. Because we think highly of our show.
I was going to say, that was the subtext.
It's always Glenn Weldon who's like, whatever, people. Speaking of whatever people.
But I care about these people because I have given them not one, not two, but 40 suggestions for podcasts to listen to. I think it's actually 42. So as of this taping, there are about, I think, about 24 up there. And I've just given Linda 20 more. So they should be up there, let's see, probably next month or so. But yes, they are.
If you were on Facebook yourself, you wouldn't have this problem.
It's a perfectly valid point. I take your point.
So this is a list of recommendations for other podcasts that you have put on our Facebook page.
Exactly. Yes, indeed.
So if you go to Facebook, search for Pop Culture Happy Hour, Glenn's so recommendations for podcasts.
So there's comedy podcasts, there's pop culture podcasts. Believe it or not, there's some others out there. comics podcast, and then everything else. So those are the lists that I have up there. So yes, there's suggestions there, like Extra Hot Grade, of course. There's WTF, the Mark Maron podcast.
Some of the ones we've talked about here on the podcast Comedy Death Ray and some of those.
There's also You Look Nice Today, which, if I'm honest with myself, it is probably my favorite podcast ever. It's not, they're not giving us too many of them anymore, but it's very, very funny and it's very, very smart. So I would recommend that highly. You Look Nice Today.
So basically people will never have to listen to us again.
It's 40 times.
And they'll get they'll get out of the habit.
Excellent. And check out Glenn's recommendations for podcasts and you will forget to miss us completely.
No.
Trey Graham.
Have we ever talked about the Catherine Tate Show?
I don't think so.
It's a BBC sketch comedy thing, and the cast of characters is just vast, and Catherine Tate plays pretty much all of the central characters in these sketches. There are many, many idiots, male and female. Thompson, you will enjoy it. They are from many a class and locale, and pretty much throughout, Catherine Tate's timing is just impeccable. A lot of this is catchphrase comedy. There's a character who says this thing, "I'm not bothered," but to me the writing around the catchphrases is of a fairly high caliber, and the ensemble work is good.
Did you see Beyonce last night on the television?
Yeah, man. She is well fit.
That's her well nice song.
Yeah, she's fit as well.
She's better now she left Destiny's, don't you think?
Much better. But the other two were fit, man.
Yeah, I love that tune.
Yeah, right. She's well bing bing.
What?
I said Beyonce is well bing bing.
What is she, mate?
She's bing bing.
It's bling bling, mate. Bling bling.
What?
Bling bling.
Take the shame, man.
No, because I ain't bothered.
You better set yourself up there, though, innit?
No, I ain't, because I ain't bothered.
But that is funny, though, innit?
No, it ain't, actually.
Well, look, just relax, all right?
Don't tell me what to do.
No, I'm just saying don't worry about it.
Are you disrespecting me?
No, no, I'm just...
You're disrespecting me, though.
No, I'm not disrespecting you.
You're disrespecting me.
No, wait a minute.
No, because you're disrespecting me.
I'm not disrespecting you. Just chill out, man.
It is pretty serious comedy craft, and if you like that sort of thing, sketch comedy, I mean, and you have not seen The Catherine Tate Show, you should check it out. There are three seasons of it. I believe it's on Netflix streaming. It was when I checked this afternoon. So there's that.
Is that Catherine with a K or a C?
Catherine with a C.
Catherine Tate, known to the geeks out there as Donna Noble on the season of Doctor Who. She was awesome.
And
hey, Glenn knows our demographic, people. Yeah. Stephen Thompson, how would you have the people fill the hole in their hearts that you're going to leave when you go off drinking in Austin?
Well, the good news.
I mean, working in Austin.
Well, the good news is that they won't have to leave me behind. I wouldn't dare leave a hole.
Our esteemed producer, Mike Katz, have just moaned like he's having an appendicitis attack.
What if we want to, Stephen? Yeah. What if we want to leave you behind?
The neediness of Stephen Thompson knows no bounds.
So if I wanted to fill the hole in my heart with even more Stephen Thompson, how would I do that?
You just take the Stephen Thompson out of your heart and then just put him right back in.
Yeah, I've done that several times. Never takes.
But you can listen to my incessant prattlings over at All Songs Considered, where we will be doing nightly dispatches at, 2-3 o'clock every morning. We'll all gather around and
So if you think Thompson is punchy on this podcast.
The all-time greatest example of this was on night 4 of South by Southwest 2 years ago, where Kerry Brownstein and Robin Hilton had gone home. And so it was just me and Bob Boylan at 4:30 in the morning on the last night of a festival where we'd been up for 20 hours. And you would think we were wasted, but we were just that crushingly exhausted.
So you say.
So I say. But anyway, we'll be doing lots and lots and lots of jibber jabber from South by Southwest. A couple of music recommendations, things that I'm really excited about seeing there. There's a band called The Calm Blue Sea, and both of these are bands I had never heard of before I undertook preparation for South by Southwest by listening to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of songs. A band called The Calm Blue Sea. plays like big, like long, epic, sort of like building into these kind of Godspeed You Black Emperor style, like booming, beautiful music. And a band called Fang Island, which describes its sound as, and I quote, "everybody high-fiving everyone else." Which is my favorite description of a band ever. I so wish I had thought of it.
I can't decide if that's charming or just completely insufferable.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both.
And that's what I love, you know? That's the balance I try to...
That's very me.
The balance I try to strike every day. It's like if you love what I love about Andrew W.K., mm-hmm. you know, whose stuff is very much party music, as mm-hmm. they say. This is kind of in that spirit. Probably the band I'm most excited about seeing that I haven't already seen up to times before.
Great.
So those are a couple bands that I'm excited about seeing. Then there are several more concerts that we're going to be presenting in their entirety with, you know, Raphael Sadiq and Carrie Brownstein's new band and all kinds of amazing stuff. If you go to npr.org/sxsw, you can listen to and actually watch a whole bunch of concert streaming. Also, if you go to All Songs Considered, download the All Songs Considered podcast. Fang Island is one of my picks on one of the most recent episodes. You can check out these bands that way. South by Southwest runs March 16th to March 19th. We're going to be doing most of this stuff live, but then there are going to be little video things that we shoot down there. We don't even know all the things we're doing yet, so it's going to be amazing. Mike Katziff, our distinguished producer, will be working his fingers to the nubs.
Yep. Sounds good. Very, very good. Well, as I considered this problem of how to fill the hole in your heart, I thought, as I frequently do, of Netflix streaming, just because it is such an easy source of so many lovely things. And I thought about sort of the first thing that I remember really loving that I could get on Netflix streaming, which is the documentary King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
Yay.
Which I have mentioned before how much I love it, but maybe not in a while. So if you have never seen The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, it's about this back and forth battle, which incidentally, this movie was made a couple years ago, but this battle is still going on. And constantly there's trading back and forth still between these two guys for the Donkey Kong world record, and they hand it back and forth, and there's also a third guy who, since the movie came out, has sort of entered the mix. The movie is really about how there's kind of the one hugely cocky famous guy, and then there's kind of the upstart who practices in his garage, and it sounds so goofy, but it's actually incredibly compelling. it's funny, and it doesn't take, you know, Donkey Kong too seriously, and yet it takes the...
It doesn't take Donkey Kong too seriously.
It doesn't, and yet...
It could fall into that trap. I see what you're saying.
It doesn't treat it like this is some incredibly, like, serious endeavor, but it takes the people seriously, and that they are interesting human beings, even though this thing that they do is a hobby that would be frivolous. And it's interesting to ask the question whether this hobby is necessarily any more frivolous than plenty of other...
than any of mine, for example.
Well, than any other highly competitive undertaking that, you know, like playing pool or, you know, bowling or mm-hmm. whatever else. But it's a fascinating documentary. Again, King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. I watched it on Netflix streaming. I assume it's still there. And it is really among my favorite documentaries, and very good for pop culture fiends and people who are fascinated by that kind of stuff. So
and
that's
people,
my pick.
People who are fascinated by documentaries, it is excellent documentary storytelling. I mean, it has an arc. These characters are larger than life. Well, one character anyway is larger than life, but not in a way that seems manipulated or fake. It really does seem like they've really captured something about this jerk.
Right. And you gradually pick up the vocabulary and the customs of this world and how you have to do certain things and how you're expected to show up at certain times. Mm-hmm. If you're challenged, there are certain expectations. And
if you're slapped with a white glove.
Kind of. I mean, and there are things about who shows up and who officiates and who, you know, verifies who did
officiates
what.
Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
Oh, you have to see this.
I got to see
you
this
really,
movie.
Really need to see it. So we've given you plenty of ways to fill the hole in your heart. And hopefully some of those ways that you will fill the hole in your heart will make you happy this week. And that brings us to the last segment of our show, which is what is making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, kick it off.
All right. So I created a superhero named...
for God's sake.
He's kind of a preppy superhero, kind of a plainclothes superhero. His name is Biff Bampow. And I understand I'm being kind of part of the... not really being part of the solution there. And I was going to give him a little kid sidekick named Comics Aren't Just for Kids Anymore, but I couldn't fit it. There's Major Bummer. There's the burp. There's White Flight. He can create strip malls.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Wait, in which... tell us again in what context this character creation is happening, Glenn Weldon.
This is DC Universe Online, a massively multiplayer online game where you create a superhero or supervillain of your choice and give them all kinds of interesting powers and names.
And this has been apparently consuming all of Glenn Weldon's time for the last 2 weeks.
Can people who are listening to this, like, hunt down your characters
and kill them?
Fight with them?
Oh, no, Professor Zap!
Professor Zap is up at level 16. Thank you very much. So there's Sucking Chest Wound. He's a villain. There's a senior speedster named the Fun Runner. And this one's a little bit more conceptual. This is a Charles Grodin Man. And the power that Charles Grodin Man has is that people are constantly mistaking him for acclaimed character actor Charles Grodin. And I'm not going to lie, it's a little hard to adapt to a gaming environment, but I'm trying. Oh, this is more a performance piece. Something I'm workshopping.
Mother of God.
So basically how it works is, you know, I'm beating up a supervillain or something, and then somebody comes up to me, and, you know, I still haven't gotten the headset or anything, so people still keep coming up to me to make me join a group, and I don't know what they're saying because I'm not listening. So I just, in my head, I pretend that they're coming up to me and saying, excuse me, are you acclaimed character? And then I fly away. That's how I'm playing that game. And then finally, there's my favorite, Captain Tennille. So that's what's been occupying my time, making me very, very happy.
Dear God.
Oh, love will keep us together.
They might have trained muskrats. I haven't really...
They might have trained muskrats.
He might have a trained muskrat.
Yeah, muskrat.
Sally,
Susie.
And Susie.
If he does, not have a pair of trained muskrats, then you are missing an opportunity.
Yeah. You know, what I love about it is that we can't define whether or not he has a pair of trained muskrats, but we can define that someone's power is being mistaken for a trained character actor, Charles Grodin.
Well, like you said, performance art.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn Weldon, that's already what's making me happy this week, too, I think, especially Captain Tennille. But thank you for that.
Sure.
I'm glad to know that the same thing that's been making you happy continues to make you
still
happy.
Still does.
Trey Graham.
Christina Hendricks in an interstellar shift. There is... I have to confess that when you all were going on and on about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I had to sit here in silence because I've never been able to make it past episode 4.
What?
Really?
Can't. Man. Just can't.
There we're going to have to do a show sometime called I Condemn You.
How wrong I was.
I know.
Not
this is preparing you for a future episode of this show?
Yes, indeed.
I admit
indeed
that you were wrong.
I judge you.
There is, however, another Joss Whedon show that has similarly got quite a cult. I am going to admit right up front that, as with Buffy, I did not see the appeal at first. However, if you were, for whatever tragic reason, looking at me on Twitter this past Sunday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, you may have noticed that I am in the middle of watching Firefly for the first time. Like I said, I'm sorry, but the pilot sort of left me a little perplexed. Mm-hmm. You know, all that stilted future frontier bow-leggedness going on. And, do not even get me started with the Chinese, which makes Battlestar Galactica's cussing look unself-conscious. Mm-hmm. But it has grown on me. It has grown on me. And by the time I got to the episode where Christina Hendricks of Mad Men fame shows up as a character who turns out to be not what she is pretending to be. Is that a spoiler?
No.
Okay. I had sort of gotten on board with it, I think. That, I think, puts me about midway through the season now. I like the slyness and the mystery in the minister character, the Ron Glass guy with the hair. And I like the sweetness of the ship's engineer, So it makes me sad that we don't see more of Jewel State, or at least that I haven't seen more of Jewel State. I'm mostly on board. I do still have some doubts about some of the sort of basic conceits of the series. So while we're asking people to come to the Facebook page, come to the Facebook page and tell me why I should watch the rest of this season.
Without spoiling.
Yes, without no spoilers, please.
No spoilers.
But come and tell me why I should put up with the bowluggedness and the funky frontier speech. So yeah, watching Christina Hendricks in that episode that, according to Google, seems to be the favorite episode of a lot of people is one of the things that's making me happy this week.
Fantastic. Very good. Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week?
Well, mine's a little bit simple and a little bit of a cop-out. It is a follow-up on last week's episode when we rounded up our favorite entertainment for the young people.
Mm-hmm.
As a follow-up, my kids listen to this podcast. And
no.
I know.
You have kids?
Well done! And they expressed an interest based on the fact that Linda played the Muppet Show clip for Menomina. It just made them giggle and giggle and giggle and giggle and giggle. And so they asked, Dad, can we watch the Muppet Show? They had never seen it. It was just a gigantic flaw in my parenting up until that point. Borrowed the season 1 and 2 DVDs of the Muppet Show from one Linda Holmes. Like I said, important to have a crazy, crazy aunt.
Uh-huh.
And you should have seen how hard they laughed, how quickly they developed favorite characters. I will say whoever, I believe it was Mike who said the Swedish Chef was your favorite Muppet. The kids agree with you.
Bork, bork, bork.
Jonah already does a pretty mean Swedish Chef impression. You and I and George just destroyed them. They're already quoting their favorite lines.
I got one. George.
Where were you?
The kids are already just geeked out to the fullest extent on The Muppet Show. And this morning, as I walked my dear children to the bus stop, my little adorable toe-headed 7-year-old girl, Grace, said, Dad, we need to get Pee-wee's Playhouse on DVD. Because Glenn Weldon recommended it on the podcast.
Oh, well.
You're raising them right.
Last week.
You're raising them right.
So what is making me happy is the future of America.
That's wonderful.
So what I'm hearing here is that you have not yet gotten them the Janáček opera.
No.
that's what I'm hearing, too.
Making me sad this week.
Something, they were like, Dad, I hear it ends in terrible tragedy.
Trey Graham's glass is half empty. Okay. What is making me happy this week? Glenn Weldon and I were out last night seeing The Adjustment Bureau.
We were.
Which we had talked on the podcast about anticipating this movie. So we went out last night, and I would not say The Adjustment Bureau is, like, completely awesome. But there were definitely things about it I enjoyed a lot. It's kind of, as I said at the time, it's kind of fable-y, and it has these sort of magical elements, and it's very much a tale, and I like that about it. And despite the fact that they're constantly in peril of losing control of the tone completely, I think they actually keep control of the tone. It's just that it's teetering at all times. But I came to like that about it. And I think it does take some creative risks. And it's thoughtful. It's interesting. It's not just another night at the movies. And I appreciated that because I do see a lot of just another night at the movies movies these days.
Like Beastly?
Like Beastly, which I did see. So specifically what I wanted to mention from The Adjustment Bureau that is making me happy this week is if you are a Mad Men person and you are a John Slattery fan, John Slattery plays Roger Sterling on Mad Men. John Slattery in this movie is so, it is a very Roger Sterling inflected performance,
sure.
I would say. But he plays one of these kind of shadowy figures who appears in the life of Matt Damon. And he has this really wonderful touch with this dialogue where he constantly, the same way he does sometimes bring a sort of very necessary lightness to scenes on Mad Men, he brings a little bit of just the right kind of lightness to this movie, which otherwise can feel very heavily allegorical and kind of instructive and mythological and all that. He has this lovely little way of sort of making this dialogue sing, and he's just a joy to watch always. And whatever else I thought about that movie, despite the fact that it's a relatively small role in the sense that he doesn't carry a lot of big scenes, I thought he was really very, very good in this movie.
Absolutely concur. He is given a lot of very clunky exposition dumps, and he just he just delivers them great.
Yeah. One of the things that I said about it is that if I were to find fault with it, there's definitely some over-explaining of details.
Indeed.
That I could have lived without heavy explanation of some of these things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the more you explain the rules of your complex universe down to very specific things,
right,
the more your universe seems goofy.
Right. And also the movie becomes about itself and mm-hmm. not about its putative subject, so...
Right, yeah. Absolutely. Because, I mean, at heart, it's a good movie when it's a character movie and it's a love story and all that stuff.
But aided immeasurably by the performances of Emily Blunt, especially, and Matt Damon as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked on the way out about the fact that Matt Damon and Emily Blunt are both very... They have a lot of very naturalistic appeal, mm-hmm. which is sorely needed in a movie like this, or else you're just living in a very, very artificial place immediately, so... I like the movie a lot, but especially Slattery.
Yep.
Enjoyed Slattery. Also, Anthony Mackie is in it, and who is also very good, a terrific actor, and I think does a lot with, again, a very hard role that requires him to do a lot of things that don't always look like good acting, but mm-hmm. I actually think he has a kind of serenity that's intentional and that's right for the character, even though the character, I would say, is a little underwritten.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Adjustment Bureau, John Slattery, that's what's making me happy this week.
Woo, nice.
And that brings us to the end of another Pop Culture Happy Hour. As we said, we will be off next week while some of us are off in Texas enjoying the music.
Woo!
And as always, you can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. That's W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham. That is Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker, although...
I still flinch.
Yeah, Stephen's rendition has been so thoroughly eclipsed by last week's version that you should just go back and listen to that. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music. You are tapping your foot to it right now. You can find us on Facebook just by searching for Pop Culture Happy Hour, or visit us at Monkey C NPR's, as we have mentioned numerous times, pop culture and entertainment blog. And thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.